The historical quotation on view at the exhibition, it says European colonists' encounters with Australian native animals were often confused, hostile and unhappy. It was the view of most colonists that animals had no feelings or rights and were here for humans to exploit, trade, farm or kill. Mm. Is it valuable to revisit such positions in 2019?
I think it is. I think it reminds us of where we've come from, and just like we need to really look at the colonial attitudes that were expressed towards First Nations people in our Aboriginal community here, also similar views were often held of our local fauna.
Mm.
And if you imagine, Australia had sort of become the flavour of the month in Europe. The fauna was so different than anything seen before. Remember, they thought the platypus was a fictional creature that had been made up. That nothing in nature could really look like that. So Australia was sending all of its fauna back to the UK and to Europe for study. Mm. And it wasn't really until the mid-1800s when Gerard Kreft became the director of the Australian Museum, and he wanted to keep the specimens here in Australia and study them locally and adopted a slightly different approach. He'd also become an evolutionary theorist, following Darwin on his recent publication of Origin of the Species. Mm. And Kreft, in fact, is cited by Darwin in later editions of that publication for his contributions. So we had a really interesting time in New South Wales and the foundation of the colony of really starting to appreciate our wildlife. And this led to some really big developments with the emergence of the new technique of glass plate photography and actually photographing these animals as part of the way that they were recorded and studied. Up until this time, animals had only been depicted through illustrations.
Mm.
And we had a number of good illustrators here at the Australian Museum, like Harriet and Helena Scott, the Scott sisters, who recorded all the moths and butterflies of Australia in their extraordinary works. And also the snakes of Australia, they illustrated Kreft's books. But when photography started emerging, Kreft really backed this new technology. And at a time when not a lot of other people were. So it ended up that the Australian Museum now has an extraordinary collection of 15,000 glass plate negatives from this time.
Well, yeah, and it is definitely quite impressive. I mean, the procedure alone, the wet plate photographs and micrographs, you know, which are the photographs taken by a microscope, were quite unpredictable, requiring several days of exposure to capture an object. Were there, do you know of any unintended consequences from those kind of long exposures?
I don't personally know of unintended consequences, especially on those microscopic ones. But what I do know from viewing a lot of the glass plate negatives and now seeing them blown up in this exhibition is what it has revealed is detail, which we didn't know about before. Mm. So, you know, a photograph, of course, can tell you many things about an object, but it's also informed a lot of social history. We've been able to look more closely at the clothes that the museum workers were wearing at the time, or who was wearing which type of hat to distinguish their status. The shoes tell us a lot. The way the cupboards were configured with different objects stored in these open back cupboards. It's the way objects were handled. I mean, one of the big objects that was brought into the museum at the time was a sunfish, which is recorded in incredible detail in the photographs. But of course, it couldn't get through the door of the museum, so they had to set up a pulley system and pull it through a window here. Wow. But and they photographed not just the specimen, but also all the manual workings of how they got the fish specimen inside the museum.
Wow.
So it's given us a lot of insight into social history at the time of the museum, and which is really very, very interesting in itself to see those famous names of people who worked here, because at the time Kreft was working with a man called Barnes, who was not only the taxidermist, but he was a carpenter here and then pursued photography. Mm. And So Barnes was a very versatile character working at the museum, and it's revealed a lot about him. In fact, we even tracked down some of his existing family today who came in to see the exhibition.
Oh, wow.
So it just gives us a different insight. And when you see these images of blown up in this way, you really understand how important photography was. I mean, given today we all walk around with a phone in our pocket that can take very high-quality images at the blink of an eye, you know, everyone's taking photographs constantly, where then this was such a laborious process. As you said, you know, some of the exposures went on for many days. Just the equipment itself is big and bulky, and in fact we have in our archives some of that equipment, which is also on display in the exhibition.
Oh, wow. There you go. And now you're bringing it to the, you know, the broader general public. And do you think that people have always been enraptured by photography in scientific contexts?
Well, I think what they're taken by is seeing how animals were depicted at the time. And, of course, we not only have these large, we've got 67 large format prints in the exhibition, but we also have some of the original taxidermy that is photographed in it. So, for example, a piece of coral, which is really a spectacular photograph, but we actually still have that object in the collection.
Oh, wow.
So that you can see the photograph and see the real object with its tags on. So I think it speaks volumes about what museums do and how we can learn from them. I mean, we use technology today in a way that wasn't envisaged 20 years ago in terms of our DNA research work. The Australian Museum has Australia's most advanced wildlife genomics facility here. And we not only use the collection to research how different species have been impacted by various environmental factors over time, like climate change, but we also use those techniques to help on biosecurity issues. We do all the work with customs and quarantine on analysing illegally imported or exported species. So these are things that people wouldn't normally ascribe to a museum, but of course technology changes all the time and enables our expertise in this area to be used in much broader realms.
For sure. It does open up a lot of opportunities, yeah, for sure. And so it's only just opened on Saturday.
It did? And it's had great visitation. It's free with general entry to the museum. So once you've paid your general entry fee, you can see Capturing Nature, and also along with it is this fantastic book and catalogue called Capturing Nature, which really does go into the in-depth explanation about the history of photography. I mean, think of it this way. This was in 1856 that Kreft and his team started really, or 1857, started really photographing objects in this way here. Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the telephone, was the second editor of the National Geographic magazine. And at the turn of the century, late 1800s, he wanted to introduce photographs into the National Geographic magazine, black and white ones. And the trustees all resigned and kicked up a stink over this because they said it would denigrate the science, having photographs in there as well. Well, of course, National Geographic went on to be the champion of beautiful photography, science photography in a magazine, and known for that globally. Where, so 30 years earlier, here was the Australian Museum pioneering this.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very interesting thing. And so the book itself by our chief archivist, Vanessa Finney, is a really beautiful insight into the early days of photography in the colony and the way in which animals were depicted and also what the work of the museum was at that time. But you go into this exhibition and it truly is captivating. I mean, I love it. I love seeing both the photographs and the real specimens on display. And, you know, we should celebrate a bit of our history here. We're the first museum in the nation. We're 192 years old now, which is just extraordinary. And we have a collection of over 22.9 million objects and specimens, which is the largest in the Southern Hemisphere. So we have a lot of history in our archives. And this exhibition, Capturing Nature, is just a wonderful way to bring out some of those stories.
For sure, and especially now, I mean, it's quite timely considering the climate change debate and all the protests, you know, worldwide at the moment. It's important for people to see and kind of foster that appreciation once again.
It is. And, you know, museums are in a unique place in terms of understanding climate change and advocating for knowledge around it. Museums are the most trusted of all the scientific institutions. Recent studies here and in America have shown that. And so I think we've got a very important role to play in terms of explaining an issue like climate change to the public and having them understand the impacts on biodiversity, particularly. And recently, Tim Flannery rejoined the museum on a year's fellowship to focus on climate change, both research as well as giving talks to schools and other groups around some of the most salient issues that we're facing today. Mm. So we can delve back into our archives and demonstrate those changes, which are incredibly important.
It definitely is. Well, Kim, thank you so much for your time on the show today. I really look forward to seeing the exhibit.
Thank you. Yes, please come. And we're open until the 21st of July, but come early and often because it really is such a beautiful and captivating exhibition.
Perfect. Well, Kim, have a great day. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.